Chapter 2 Part 1 Our anonymous letter did worry me a little, but I soon stopped thinking about it. Then, about a week later, our servant Partridge told me that Beatrice, the girl who helped her, would not be coming today.
"She has been upset," Partridge said.
I said I was sorry and hoped that Beatrice would soon be better.
"She is perfectly well," said Partridge. "It is her feelings that are upset because of a letter she has received suggesting, well, that she is too friendly with you, Mr. Burton."
Since I hardly knew what Beatrice looked like, I said,
"What nonsense!" "That is just what I said to the girl's mother," said Partridge. "But Beatrice's boyfriend got one of those letters too, and he doesn't think it is nonsense at all. So I think it is a good thing Beatrice has left, because she would not be so upset unless there was something she didn't want found out. There is no smoke without fire, Mr. Burton."
I did not know then how very tired I was going to get of that particular phrase. Part 2 That morning, I had decided to walk down to Limstock on my own for the first time. We had arranged that Joanna would meet me with the car and drive me back up the hill in time for lunch. The sun was shining, and there was the sweetness of spring in the air. I picked up my walking sticks and started off. It felt like an adventure. But I did not, after all, walk down to the town alone. I had not gone far when I heard the sound of a bell behind me, and then Megan Hunter almost fell off her bicycle at my feet.
"Hello," she said as she got up.
I rather liked Megan, and always felt rather sorry for her. She was the lawyer Symington's stepdaughter, Mrs. Symington's daughter by a first marriage. Nobody talked much about Mr. or Captain Hunter. I had heard that he had treated Mrs. Symington very badly. She had divorced him, then came to Limstock with Megan to forget, and had eventually married the only suitable unmarried man in the place, Richard Symington. They had two little boys together, whom they obviously loved very much, and I thought that Megan must sometimes feel a bit left out. She wasn't at all like her mother, who was a small, pretty woman. Megan was tall and awkward, and although she was actually 20, she looked more like a schoolgirl. She had untidy brown hair, green eyes, a thin face, and a delightful smile. Her clothes were unattractive, and she usually wore thick stockings with holes in them. She looked, I thought this morning, much more like a horse than a human being. In fact, she would have been a very nice horse if someone had brushed her.
"I've been up to the farm," she said, "to see if they had got any duck's eggs. They've got some sweet little pigs. Do you like pigs? I even like the smell."
"Well-kept pigs shouldn't smell," I said.
"Shouldn't they? Are you walking down to the town? I saw you were alone, so I thought I would stop and walk with you. But I stopped rather suddenly."
"You've torn your stocking," I said. Megan looked at her right leg.
"Oh, yes. But there are two holes in it already, so it doesn't really matter, does it?"
"Don't you ever mend your stockings, Megan?"
"When Mummy tells me to, but she doesn't often notice what I do, so it's lucky in a way."
"You don't seem to understand that you're grown up," I said.
"You mean I ought to be more like your sister, or dressed up?"
I didn't much like this description of Joanna. "She looks clean and tidy and good to look at," I said.
"She's very pretty," said Megan. She isn't a bit like you, is she?
Why not?
Brothers and sisters aren't always alike.
No, my half-brothers Brian and Colin aren't like each other.
We walked on in silence for a moment or two. Then Megan said,
You fly aeroplanes, don't you?
Yes.
That's how you got hurt.
Yes, I crashed. She paused, and then asked with the honesty of a child,
Will you get better and be able to fly again, or will you always need sticks?
My doctor says I will get better.
I'm glad you're going to get better, Megan said. I thought that you might look angry because you were never going to be well again.
I'm angry, I said, because I'm in a hurry to get fit again, and these things can't be hurried.
Then why worry?
I began to laugh. Megan, aren't you ever in a hurry for things to happen?
No. Why should I be? Nothing ever happens.
I was struck by something sad in the words. Haven't you got any friends here?
There aren't many girls who live here, and they all think I'm awful.
Why? Megan shook her head. Did you enjoy school?
It wasn't bad, but the teachers could never answer questions properly.
Very few teachers can, I said.
Of course, I am rather stupid, said Megan. And such a lot of things seem to me such nonsense. All that stuff those poets, Shelley and Keats, wrote about birds. And Wordsworth, going all silly over some daffodils. And Shakespeare.
What's wrong with Shakespeare?
He says things in such a difficult way that you can't understand what he means. But I like some Shakespeare. I like Goneril and Regan.
Why these two?
Because, well, something must have made them behave so badly.
For the first time, I really thought about them. I had always accepted that King Lear's elder daughters were two very unpleasant women, and that was all. But Megan's demand for a reason interested me. I'll think about it, I said. Wasn't there any subject you enjoyed at school, Megan?
Only maths.
Her face suddenly looked happy.
I loved maths. I think numbers are beautiful.
We were now entering the high street, and Dr. Griffith's sister, Amy, called out to us.
Hello, you two. Beautiful morning, isn't it?
She had all the confidence that her brother did not have, and she was good-looking in a strong outdoor way.
Megan, I'm so glad to see you, she said in her deep voice. I want some help addressing envelopes for the Red Cross.
Megan said something I could not hear, leant her bicycle against a wall, and went straight into a shop.
She's a strange child, said Miss Griffith. Very lazy. She needs an interest in life.
I thought that was probably true. But I also felt that if I were Megan, I would have said no to any of Amy Griffith's suggestions.
Laziness is so wrong, continued Miss Griffith. Particularly in young people. Megan isn't even pretty, and she is very stupid. Of course, it would be boring if we were all the same, but I don't like to see anyone not enjoying their life. I enjoy my life, and I want everyone else to. I'm always busy, always happy.
Suddenly, Miss Griffith saw a friend on the other side of the street, and with a shout, she ran across the road, leaving me free to continue on my way to Messrs. Galbraith, Galbraith and Symington. I was shown into Richard Symington's inner office. Watching the lawyer, as he bent over the documents I had brought. I thought that if Mrs. Symington had experienced a very difficult first marriage, she had certainly chosen safety for her second. Richard Symington was an example of calm respectability. He had a long neck, a long, expressionless face, and a long, thin nose. A kind man, no doubt, a good husband and father, but not a man to make a heart beat faster. We quickly settled the matter I had come to ask him about, and as I got up, I said, "I walked down the hill with your stepdaughter." For a moment, Mr. Symington looked as though he did not know who his stepdaughter was. Then he smiled.
"Oh, yes, of course. Megan. We're trying to find something for her to do, yes. But, of course, she's still very young. And some people think that she's not very clever."
I left through the outer office, where a middle-aged woman with a big nose and large glasses was working at a typewriter. If this was Miss Ginch, I agreed with Owen Griffith that any sexual relations between her and her employer were very unlikely. I went into the street and looked around, hoping to see Joanna with the car. The walk had made me very tired, but she had not arrived yet. Then suddenly, my eyes widened with surprise and delight. Along the pavement, there came floating towards me a goddess. There is really no other word for it. Her perfect face, the curling golden hair, the tall, beautifully shaped body. And she walked like a goddess, without effort, coming nearer and nearer. I was so excited that I dropped one of my sticks on the pavement, and I nearly fell down myself. It was the strong arm of the goddess that caught and held me. "Thanks so much," I said. "I'm very sorry." Then she handed me the stick, smiled kindly, and said,
"That's all right. It was no trouble, I promise you."
And the magic died completely with the sound of her very ordinary voice. She was a nice, healthy-looking girl. Nothing more. Joanna had now driven up and stopped in the road beside me. She asked if there was anything the matter.
"Nothing," I said. "I've had a shock, that's all."
"Do you know who that is?" I pointed to the girl's back as she floated away.
"That's the Symington's governess."
Joanna opened the door of the car and I got in.
"It's funny, isn't it? Some people have the most perfect looks and absolutely no sex appeal."
I said that if she was a governess, having no sex appeal was probably a good thing.